Welcome to Counter Stories, programmed by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. My name is Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I've stated are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
I'm Anthony Galloway, Senior Partner at the Dangerous Group and Pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Don Eubanks, Associate at Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
We are now at the start of what we have done now for a couple of years, which is doing a legislative wrap-up. And with that in mind, we have some very talented guests today who I'm going to invite to introduce themselves. They are both from Fresh Energy.
I'm Brenda Caselius, and I am the new executive director at Fresh Energy, and I'm so excited to be with you here today.
Thank you all for having us. My name is Anjali Bain, she, her pronouns. I'm the lead director of energy access and equity at Fresh Energy.
That's awesome. We're so excited to have you both for many reasons, not the least of which we want to know more about Fresh Energy, what your mission is, the work that you do, and then we're going to get right into some substance in terms of some new legislation that we're all excited about. So let's start with your mission, Brenda. Let's talk to us about what Fresh Energy is about. And of course, you're no stranger to us. You have been an incredible leader in community, most recently with the school system, of course. But I'm going to turn it over to you to really have us understand not only your role here, but your past leadership experience. And what excites you about the role that you are leading now at Fresh Energy?
Well, thank you, Luz. It's so great to be with you here today. And as you stated, I was Commissioner of Education for 8 years under Governor Mark Dayton and had a deep expertise in policymaking and also in helping students be their very best and to seek out their greatest potential. And what brought me here really was the fact that our youth, when I spoke with them, would talk about their sadness around climate change. They would talk about their decision-making around climate change. And then I did some research on that and found that about 57% of youth express deep sadness and anxiety around climate change. And, you know, I've always made it my life's purpose to make a difference for children. And I think that, yes, I could work on and continue to work on giving them a great education and an equitable education, but they also need a planet in which to thrive in. A lot was going on in the legislature at the time. We had a $17 billion surplus. There were a lot of action. We had a trifecta with the Democratic control, both in the governor's office as well as the legislature in both houses, with a narrow majority in the Senate, making things really possible to make some big change. And so there was some major legislation and over $1 billion funneled into clean energy policies and rebates and tax incentives that will match what was just passed federally in the Infrastructure Inflation Reduction Act. So lots going on at a time of great change and great need.
Real results we're seeing with climate change sooner than, honestly, our scientists have modeled it. So the science is getting better and better modeling these impacts more accurately. One of the reasons why we use the term climate change versus an earlier term that folks might be aware of, which is global warming, is climate change really encompasses the changes that are happening in all seasons. So, you know, we're getting hotter summers, but we're actually getting rapidly warming winters. And I know it doesn't feel like that when we have snow from November to April. But if folks notice, our winter was also warmer than average. And in a place like Minnesota, sort of maybe not intuitively known, but a place like Minnesota is actually warming quicker than other parts of the U.S. And within our seasons, our winter is warming faster than our summer. So it is, you know, we're not just going to get rid of winters right away, but our winters are generally going to be getting milder than they had been. And by that standard, Minnesota standard, it means less negative 40-degree wind chill days and maybe only a handful of negative 20 degree days. So still cold, but it is actually changing, and all that has impacts on our infrastructure and our ecosystem as well.
And Anjali, as we have you speaking, tell us more about your role within Fresh Energy.
Sure. So Fresh Energy is a clean energy policy advocacy group. And by that, I mean that we are trying to convince decision makers, mostly at the state legislature and in regulatory arenas, so the Public Utilities Commission or state agencies, trying to make those decision makers take actions that advance clean energy. By clean energy, we mean everything from renewable energy, so solar and wind, to electric vehicles, like personal vehicles or electric buses, to building electrification and also energy efficiency. The Energy Access and Equity team, my team, we get to really hone in on the human part. So it's really, okay, when we're making this change to a clean energy economy, how are we actually making sure that everyone is benefiting from it? And specifically, how do we make sure that those most harmed by climate change, by air pollution, by existing inequities in the system, which tends to be communities of color, what we call under-resourced communities, or those with lower incomes or lower wealth, and those living outside of the Twin Cities, how do we make sure all those groups and any other underserved group from our current economy or energy system, that they are not only participating and included in this clean energy economy, but are benefiting in a way that we have not yet seen in our society? So really, how are we trying to transform systems of inequity so that they're more equitable as we're also transitioning to a clean energy future as well?
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Lee Lee with co-host Luz Maria Frias, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks, with special guests Dr. Brenna Casillas and Anjali Baines. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
We are, then let's take a look at the legislation that just passed. It's 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040. So if you can approach it from a high-level understanding of what that means, and I also know that there's a segment of that law specifically that speaks to environmental justice areas, that Anjali, I think that speaks to some of the points you were making as well. So why don't we start first with having all of us understand what that law is and its impact on us as a community.
So 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040 bill is a huge, huge deal for Fresh Energy. It is something we've been supporting, working on for quite a while. But again, as with most of the legislation we'll hopefully touch upon today, a result of many partners and many years of advocacy, in particular the 100% campaign, was really tasked with leading on this and expanding the coalition, so includes those outside of clean energy space. So major kudos to the 100% campaign for running a great, great campaign around this. This law really asks electric utilities to go a bit faster than what many of the utilities were already planning to do, and asks them by 2040, make sure that 100% of your electricity in the state is from carbon-free resources. The law also goes into some specifics on the proportion of that electricity that needs to be from renewable energy versus other services that might be considered carbon-free, such as nuclear energy, but not necessarily renewable. And it sets some initial benchmarks and helps set a regulatory process to make sure the utilities are actually getting on track to this goal and meeting the requirements. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. The reason why it's so exciting is because to reach our clean energy and climate goals, which generally the science says we have to be carbon neutral or carbon emission neutral by 2050, that relies on an electricity system that is as clean as possible sooner than that goal. So we were really excited for Minnesota to join a bunch of other states, I think about 17 other states who have already passed similar laws. So for us to join and make sure our electricity was cleaning up faster than that overall goal, because the rest of our work and our task ahead is really to make sure then, how are we electrifying transportation? How are we electrifying buildings? How are we electrifying as much as possible industry and agriculture so that that is using the most efficient source of energy, and the energy being used to power those is coming from the cleanest energy. So that's why it was such a huge deal. We were really, really excited to have it pass after many years of advocacy.
And there are things in this legislative session, policies and laws that were built that are process laws around regulation and around siting and building codes, et cetera, to kind of incentivize or promote clean energy. And then there are really specific projects that were funded, like rebates for cars and bikes and rebates for heat pumps and the initiation of a Minnesota Climate Innovation Finance Authority for something that's called a green bank for lending and giving funding to folks who maybe can't fully afford to replace a heat pump or to replace an electric panel. There is so much in this.
So I've got to smile real big because, as usually happens on Outer Stories, when we have brilliant people come on, I get folks who are principal in my own journey. So I think it was Castilius who was my principal and my boss at EMID for a while and at Minneapolis Schools for a while and all of those things. So, hey.
Hey, good to see you.
You too. One of the things, and Anjali, I'm curious about this because you've got a background in solar energy. And one of the things that keeps coming up when as a sir, we have brought some of the findings and some of the work from this into our conversation with the regional kind of University of Minnesota Extension work that's happening in our area. And one of those is looking at some innovations, and we actually have down the street a home, an affordable house that was built in the vein of Via del Sol, I think it was, that you have an article out about that was in 2019 that built itself to be carbon neutral, but in a way that, you know, the folks who are living there are going to be folks from our community. And there's a disconnect that was happening when we were trying to bring this conversation to the church body, because it seemed like this whole conversation around being carbon neutral and clean energy and things like that is something for folks to worry about who don't have to worry about putting food on the table. You know, like that occupies all those conversations. And so it was like it seemed like a heavy lift to try to say, no, this affects you too. Like there's expectations we can have, there's pressure we can put on developers for affordable housing to take advantage of this. Now there's a mandate that we have to be on track for. So I'm curious what some of your tactics have been to try to kind of bridge this gap for folks who don't see themselves as part of this conversation, because, you know, it hasn't been historically, or they're like, I'm worried about just keeping a job. You know, what has been that conversation for you all?
Yeah, that is a great point. And it is something that, you know, hasn't been solved, but is constantly something we talk about and are trying to be better and figure out ways to broach those conversations. And one of the things that is exciting about the Energy Action Equity team is we get to start looking at those intersections with things like affordable housing. And the question for us is, how do we make it as easy as possible for the individual to benefit from this without having to do all those steps themselves to figure out financing, to become an energy efficiency and electrification expert? Like, though, that is never going to work, regardless of the person, probably, but especially, like you said, when there's so many other priorities. So the primary ways we've been thinking about it so far is working with other advocacy groups who may focus on housing or even like immigration, and thinking about where are the points of commonalities with your mission, our mission, and how can we find connection, and how can we be a group that brings the clean energy expertise and helps you figure out how that applies to your space. Because I think, you know, Brenda sort of mentioned this in her introduction, the great thing about climate and clean energy, it actually touches every part of our life. There is nothing that isn't going to be involved in this transition. So when we talk about housing, it's really how do we make sure that current housing and new housing is built in a way that's efficient, healthy, and affordable. That's really the lens that our team brings to our work. It's also working with utilities. We do a lot of work with utilities and their energy efficiency planning to make sure that the programs they're designing for what we call under-resourced customers, that they're done in a way that eases interaction and participation in the program and really makes it, again, as easy as possible from the customer perspective, to plug in and have support and get funding and also technical assistance to do this work. There's a whole other layer of this conversation around renters and multifamily housing properties that might be benefiting from a deeper dive discussion, but it's something we think about in terms of how do we do outreach to other complementary groups.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Lee Lee with co-hosts Luz Maria Frias, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks, with special guests Dr. Brenna Casillas and Anjali Baines. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
I'm going to jump on that because I've never even heard of a heat pump. So, I mean, just to throw it out, you know, so just, you know, listening to this conversation, you guys used the term heat pump. I'm thinking, what the hell is a heat pump? So while everyone was talking, I had to look it up. I never heard of a heat pump. So there's much about this kind of stuff that, and I consider myself, I'm kind of pretty well informed. And I've never heard of a heat pump. And I'm a homeowner, right? And I'm a member of the Mille Lacs Band. And so there are many things about this that people just are totally unaware of. And the bottom line is, am I going to see an increase in my monthly electric bill, which is already out of hand, right? So, I mean, that for me, that's how we have to break it down so that we understand.
That's a really good point that both of you make. And that is something that Fresh Energy does do, is we do webinars. We do education with the community. We make sure that we partner with our coalition, like our CERTs, which are their citizen boards, basically, and regional actors who work within Minnesota on clean energy. And we're partnering all the time to try to get the information out. We're also partnering with Commerce to get the information out and make it really simple and easy.
Marshalling around an energy conversation can be a heavy lift in the marketing space, but I already have folks at the table for the 1,500 to 2,000 pounds of food that comes out of this community garden that it is in service. Now, if I marry that with how do we cook it, how do we do these things, especially in an area where things fail. Things fail in Duluth when that snow hits. Not so much the cold, but the snow itself, the sheer weight of that, right? And to be able to marry this conversation with other ways that helps you kind of plug in, pun intended, to a conversation from a different way.
Yeah, I think everything you all have said is exactly right. And we have a lot of explainers on our website as well. We actually have a heat pump. What is a heat pump blog post? I had to read it also before this to remind myself. You're right, it's a heating and cooling device, especially with so much federal funding coming in. You know, we've mostly been talking about a state law, but there's so much federal funding coming in for heat pumps or electric vehicles or energy efficiency. And on top of the state funding that passed the session. So our question to people like state agencies, to people like utilities, to energy efficiency implementers, the people who have the point of contact with customers, is really, how are you aligning your message or all of these things so that there's a one-stop shop for people to come and learn not only about the technology, but also figure out how to participate in that as well. So that's been like a key through line of many advocates, advocacy, honestly. You know, a lot of us recognize it's a challenge and we really want a central resource. Department of Commerce had launched in the last couple of days their landing page for these rebates for both federal and state programs. I think that'll be a really great place to start showing to people and kind of being a point source of information. We are working on the utility side to make sure that they are aligning their resources with the state resources, because what we don't want is just a piecemeal of you can find some things here, you can find some things there, you can find some things there, which even for those of us in the space can get frustrating to try to track down all those different sources. So can we hear you loud and clear? And that's exactly something we're trying to work on.
And I think that the people who are against this bill I think that's where they got some sort of advantage, because some of the statements that were coming out was that this was jeopardizing Minnesota's economic future. And statements like that, for folks of us like us, like we're pretty well informed, right? We're smart people, but we still can't wrap our heads around some of these things. And when your legislator comes out and says this is going to jeopardize your family's future and the economics, you know, you start to freak out and you start to think, okay, maybe this isn't good for our state. And so that's where this confusion lies that kind of gets some of us, I think.
Kind of the opposition message heard around the 100% carbon-free electricity bill. That was the main kind of talking point. And the thing with that is climate change in general is causing a lot of costs to come up. I think when you hear a message like that, it's misleading in many ways. But the primary way is that if we don't make this change, climate change, the cost from climate change, whether it's from extreme weather, all the things you mentioned, the grid infrastructure from heavy snow or, you know, thawing, rapid thawing, freezing cycles, or our physical infrastructure, all that will cost much more than the cost we need to build up our electric grid in order to be able to have renewable and solar and battery storage be primary ways of getting our energy. So that is sort of the actual context of thinking about it. Will we have to make investments? Will utilities have to make investments to be able to build a grid that can be 100% carbon free by 2040? Yes, absolutely. Does it have to be the most expensive version? No, that is where we come in as advocates to really figure out, help them. How do you do it in a way that is the most effective use of ratepayer dollars? And, you know, renewable and solar, I would be remiss not to say renewable and solar are cheaper than traditional power generating sources that we see, for instance, fossil gas, which is our term for natural gas. So fossil gas and coal, like renewable and energy is cheaper. So it's those sort of information. It is easy when you're not in the kind of industry to see it and really get scared. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to kind of trigger that fear instinct to be cautious, instead of realizing that we are not to make anyone feel scared about this part. We are very behind on where we need to go for climate change and clean energy. So laws like this are necessary for us to be able to have a future where we're not having to deal with the major costs with a rapidly changing climate. But yeah, that's a really good point. And it brings up that as much as we did advocacy and communication, continued advocacy and communication around what these laws actually mean, so there's not continued disinformation out there, is really important. So I really thank you all for inviting us on this podcast as a chance to keep clarifying the message and share what is really happening with these things.
This law has an aspect that refers to the environmental justice areas. And from my understanding, the Public Utilities Commission, the PUC, needs to consider the economic and environmental impact for BIPOC communities, including Indian Country. So, Anjali, can you help us understand more about that and those concerns and the impact that we hope to see different than what, you know, we've seen historically as they've destroyed our communities disparately so?
This session, one of the clearer sessions in which environmental justice priorities were at the forefront, or at least part of the conversations of as we have this opportunity, how are we actually making sure these opportunities are including and supporting the priorities of environmental justice groups. So this session, there's a couple of things that passed that were focusing specifically, I think, to your point, Luz, on the history and legacy of pollution for communities of color and tribal nations from past decisions made around how do we power our society. And in particular, there is an act called the Frontlines Communities Protection Act, which was really pulled together again by that Minnesota Environmental Justice Table and led by Gopal to put together a policy in which when a state agency, the pollution control agency, when it issued air permits for what's called point source pollution, so like a industrial facility or manufacturing facility, for it to consider the cumulative impacts of air pollution. And by that, I mean, traditionally, air permitting happens in a way that looks at the single source of pollution and thinks about, okay, so it's emitting this much tons of pollution, it's under our guidelines, it's okay. what that permitting process doesn't do is really look at, but this neighborhood that's getting sited in, it already has a couple of pollution sources or it has a highway through it. So you're not really just putting this amount of pollution into an open, clean airspace. It's really adding to the existing air quality to the area. But there wasn't a process in our old air permitting system to really understand that layering of pollution in certain communities. So the Frontlines Communities Protection Act put forth a framework, a process to start a rulemaking so that the pollution control agency would actually have rules in place for the air permits where it was considering those overall impacts communities rather than just a single point source. And this was a priority brought to us, again, by those environmental justice advocates. I've heard it's one of the nation-leading versions of the legislation out there, which is really, really exciting. It only applies to the metro area, as I understand it, but there's an opt-in opportunity, or metro area, Duluth, Rochester. And then tribal nations have an option to opt in or opt out for the process. So, you know, really making sure it's based on their desires rather than having it be a blanket. So that is the landmark piece of legislation that really culminated around the priorities and really wanted to recognize some of those past decision-makings that harmed those communities in particular.
Thank you both so much for your incredible insight. We have learned so much, but there's that much more to learn, it sounds like. You seem like you covered just a little bit of it. And we'll maybe have you back again in the near future to help us understand even deeper into the law, but also the field, quite honestly. There's so much here that is typically covered by mainstream news that doesn't really unpack all the acronyms and the fundamental understandings. So it is definitely a learning curve for many of us as we sit and listen to you both. So thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you for your incredible work in our community, making sure that equity is always at the forefront. We appreciate Fresh Energy for all that you do. We'll encourage our listeners to jump on your website as well as the other websites that have been mentioned. And with this, we'll close it off. This has been Counter Stories, programmed by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. My name is Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments or opinions that I've relayed are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
I'm Anthony Galloway, Senior Partner at the Dendros Group and Pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
I'm Don Eubanks, Associate at Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
And Brenda and Angeli, you can go ahead and sign up.
I'm Brenda Caselius, Executive Director of Fresh Energy, and just very grateful for this conversation and look forward to continuing it in the days and months to come.
And I'm Anjali Baines, Lead Director of Energy Access and Equity at Fresh Energy, and thank you so much for the conversation today.
This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.